Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. One thing you should know about me is I'm a bit of a newspaper geek. Growing up in our house, we got the Allentown Morning Call, then the afternoon paper, that was the Bethlehem Globe Times, and then my father would bring home the Philadelphia Inquirer every day when he got home from work. I eventually delivered the Globe and in grad school, and afterwards I worked at the Miami Herald in the sports department. So when I moved to Vermont, my first 3 years I lived in Barrie and then Montpelier, and it was a treat getting the Times Argus every day. Not only the local reporting that I loved, which is a great way to get immersed into what Vermont is all about when you move here, but I was always wowed by the paper's photography. It was great stuff. Sometimes it was the newsy stuff, a fire, a car crash, or some governmental thing. But then there'd be these killer shots of nature, a close-up of a bird or a flower. I loved that. I knew I was in the right place. And so much of that photography was the work of Jeb Wallace Broder. I'd always check the photo credit, you know, the newspaper guy in me. So I've invited Jeb to be on the show today. We're going to talk about his life in pictures, shooting for a newspaper, and maybe we'll learn some things about getting great shots. Jeb, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Great to be here.
Great
thanks
to have
for checking
you.
The photo credit. It's in pretty small type, so I'm not sure everybody sees it. But
I know.
Appreciate you making the effort.
I do. You do it, right, when you look at
paper,
magazine? Yep.
Well, in magazines, it's tough. It's often like tiny letters in the crease of the pages, so you really got to look for it. But I always do, yeah.
All right, good. Listeners, if you'd like to ask Jeb a question, or maybe you want to share a photo or photos of his that you've really admired, you can give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. I should tell you, Jeb, too, that I worked at an ad agency, and if we did a brochure or a publication and any photo was missing the photo credit, I'd just go ballistic. Right?
You're one of the few, I think, though. I still see, especially online, my work being used many times with no photo credit.
Mm.
And often no payment either. So it's like the only compensation I get is the photo credit sometimes. And when it's not there, I'm not too happy about that. But
now,
such is life.
Yeah. Not that this has any relevance to the Jeb Wallace Broder story, but my first camera was a hand-me-down Kodak Brownie. It was given to me as my family visited the New York World's Fair in 1965, and I promptly lost it at the New York World's Fair in 1965. I know. Do you remember your first camera?
Tragic.
Yeah.
I do, because it wasn't that long ago. Actually, my introduction to the photography world came when my parents gave me a Pentax K1000 camera for college graduation. So I had never really taken photos before, you know, I was 21. And that was a very super basic entry-level camera, everything manual, but it definitely opened up a whole new world for me.
What did you major in college?
I went to Middlebury College, and I majored in studio art, so I have a sort of a fine arts background. And as any artist listening know, it's pretty challenging to make a living in fine arts, and photography kind of is a little bit more marketable thing. So I took some of my fine arts skills, or I guess you'd say, and put it into photography, and have made a career out of it. So that worked out pretty well, actually.
Well, it wasn't that long after you graduated from Middlebury that you got your gig with the Times Argus, and you're still there.
That's right.
Yeah. So how did you go from, you know, graduation, getting that Pentax, and just a few years later going to work at the Times Argus as a photographer?
Well, I after college, I worked for the Forest Service for three seasons, two in Colorado and one in New Hampshire. And I was like a backcountry wilderness ranger, so I spent lots of time out in the wilderness. And I brought my camera along and spent a lot of time taking pictures, and really honed in my craft. I read photo books. I've never taken a class in photography, but I had some favorite photographers that I spent a lot of time looking at their stuff, and I was, very critical of my own work, seeing how I could get better, and I just sort of self-taught myself how to take halfway decent photos. And then when I returned to Vermont, I submitted a few pictures to Vermont Life, the late, great Vermont Life.
Yeah.
And a couple of those were picked up for just like their engagement calendar or their daily planner or something. And then I don't remember how I heard about it, but there was the Times Argus had a whole Sunday staff back in those days.
Yeah.
And Dirk Van Susteren was the Sunday editor, and
oh,
he... I called up, and he was looking for just a one-day-a-week person, I think, to work Saturdays. And I came in, and I had just these two little clippings of Vermont Life photos that I'd had published. And solely based on that, he took a chance and brought me on, and the rest is history. I really appreciate that he had a little faith in me. I'm not sure what it was based on much, but I worked hard and been here now. It's going to be 30 years almost. So,
wow. What do you attribute?
I did work one day a week for about a year, and then one of the staff photographers left to pursue other things, and I took over his full-time job.
So. Oh, that's fantastic. To what do you attribute your longevity in the newspaper business?
It's an awesome job.
Yeah.
I love it. That's really what it is. It satisfies many things that I think most people look for in a job, except for financially. It's not probably the greatest occupation out there, but it's enough for me to live on and put my kid through college. But it's creatively, it's super satisfying, and this is a great place to work. I just get to meet a lot of really cool people, and I know that people appreciate the work that I do, so feeling appreciated is a big part of it. And I just love it. You know, every day, I have no idea what I'm going to shoot today, so it's exciting in that way. I don't know what's in store.
Yeah.
It could be a struggle today, or I could find something really cool that I'm not expecting. And so I like that aspect of it, too. It's not the same day-in, day-out drudgery.
Jeb, who are those photographers who you looked up to and kind of emulated in your early days of photography?
My main one, I'd say, was a guy named Galen Rowell, and he was he combined photography with sort of an outdoor adventure lifestyle. He's a pretty well known rock climber and mountaineer, and he went on expeditions all over the world. But he was a fantastic photographer too, and a kind of a teacher of photography. So he had a series of books that, you know, he'd have a fantastic photo, and he would tell the whole story behind it, how he came to be in that place and how he actually took the photo, and I just devoured those. So he's no longer alive, but I think he has a gallery out in California. He was a California-based guy, and I still have a bunch of his books, but that's what really got me. I'm a pretty active person, and I was into rock climbing and mountaineering back then, so he kind of put those two things together for me. And there's others, too, but he was the main one, I think.
Galen Rowell.
Lit my fire. Galen
nice.
Rowell, yeah.
How has
there was
work...
a guy named Tom Wolfe, who's a fantastic nature photographer. I really liked his stuff, too, but there's a ton of really good photographers when, you know, it comes down to it.
Yeah. How has working for a newspaper changed in those, you know, almost 30 years?
Oh, it hasn't changed at all. a lot of
wow.
It's
that's breaking news here on Vermont Viewpoint.
A lot of it's just the mechanics of getting images onto the page. When I first started, and for the first maybe 10 years, we were shooting film.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd go out and shoot our rolls of film, and we'd come back to the newspaper. We had a dark room, and I'd go into the dark room and load my film in the dark and develop it. We didn't actually make prints, but we developed the film with all the chemistry, And then we had a very rudimentary film scanner, so we'd digitize the rolls of film and make it into a digital file, and then it got placed on the page. And then I think 10 years in, I think it was 2002, we got our first digital camera, which was just a game changer. Of course, anyone who's, that's an old story now, but, you know, it used to be, well, film was very expensive for one thing. I think the paper spent about $30,000 or $40,000 a year just on film and processing. And then all of a sudden we bought this one camera and we never had that expense again. And also, you know, I'd kind of go into assignments like, is this a one roll assignment or a half a roll assignment or a two roll assignment? And that, you know, just all that change. You never knew exactly what you were getting until you developed it. And then you just had instant feedback when digital came, and it's been no looking back since then. It's been fantastic. And then we've been just through a lot of digital upgrades over the years, but that was the biggest thing, I'd say. Real game changer, and all the chemistry and stuff involved. I don't miss that stuff.
That's right. And you're not locked in a dark room. That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a toxic environment, you know.
Yep.
Literally. So.
That's right.
Glad to be done with that. But the actual, the gathering the news, you know, what I actually do day in and day out has changed very little. You know, I go out and I find pictures, and this happens to be a very fertile place to do that. I'm lucky in that way. It's not that hard.
Yeah. What a beautiful job description. I go out and I gather pictures.
Yeah. That's really what it is. You know, I drive around. People often say, you know, where do you come up with this stuff? And it's just open eyes and open mind. I just drive around, walk around, and see what I can see. There are days when it's a bit of a struggle. The pictures you referenced at the beginning, the nature shots, tend to happen on days when it's a bit of a struggle and I just can't find anything going on, so I'll say, okay, I'm going to get a nature shot, you know.
I love that.
I don't do it every day, but people do. People love them. There is a very receptive audience for bird photos, I find out here. I think when I put a photo of a bird in there, I get more feedback than almost anything, so...
Well, for me, Jeb, it was just that's not what I expect to find in my newspaper. Said, reading newspapers all those years, and it shook me. It made me so happy to see a newspaper say, you know what, we're going to devote, and sometimes they'd be big, you know, almost half-page shots in color, and I thought, this is stunning. This is worth the price of my subscription right here.
Well, we're really lucky. The Times Argus has always placed a real premium on sharing things like that and running them big and devoting space in the paper to stuff like that. And it really does make a difference. It does make people happy. And I think it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom news stuff. There's a lot of great things going on around us. And I'm really blessed that the Times Argus has, you know, committed to sharing that with people.
Yeah. And let's take a call from Fred in Montpelier. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've been following Jeb's outstanding pictures for the 30 years he's worked for the newspaper, and that's one of the reasons I buy the Times Argus.
Yeah.
I read the Times Argus just to see Jeb's picture. Congratulations, and keep up the good work, Jeb.
Fred, that's a great call. And, Jeb, I don't know if you realize, I mean, you must through the years, you've been there 30 years, realize the impact you have on people and, you know, how much we do take notice of the work you do every day.
You know, I actually do, and it's super rewarding. And thanks, Fred, for that nice comment. I'm sort of joke that I've slowly photographing every single person who lives in central Vermont.
And, right.
I'm getting there, and there's just a lot of amazing people who live here. And, I on the street, I hear it all the time. A lot of people recognize me, of course, because I'm carrying a camera around with me, and I go to events and stuff. And I've got sort of not blonde hair anymore. Getting got a kind of a nice shock of gray hair, so I, people recognize me and often come up and say how much they like my work, which is super gratifying. I really appreciate that.
And I would imagine, too, except for, like, the really camera shy, you know, it's kind of nice. People kind of, oh, the photographer from the Times Argus is here. You know, so there's a bit of, you know, kind of a special notice, you know, when you do arrive, and it's usually very positive.
It really is. It always surprises me, you know, in all these years, just a handful of times that I've had a bad interaction with people. People are just generally really generous. You know, occasionally they don't want to have their picture taken just because they're shy or what for whatever reason.
Or like me, they're in witness protection program, you know.
So they might be in witness protection programs.
Right.
I mean, just the other day I was heading home. I needed one more photo. I was going up Hollister Hill in Marshfield, heading back to my house, getting late in the day, and I just saw a guy walking with a baby towards some horses behind a barn.
Mm.
And I pulled over, and I was like, you know, you just don't know what you're getting into. But I'm like, yep, let's see what's going on. So I walked over, and as usual, they were just super friendly. Come on in, climb over the fence. Yeah, I'm just showing my daughter my cousin's horse, and, you know, we had a nice long chat, and they knew who I was, fortunately, which doesn't hurt either, but got a really nice picture out of it. And, you know, I'm just, you know, basically trespassing, walking into their backyard, and rarely does that go bad for me. I mean, people just, I'm always amazed. Definitely restores my faith in humanity on a daily basis, just how some people are really, that people are good around here.
Yeah, they really are. So yeah. Welcoming.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones again, and we're going to Brookfield this time. Hi, Paula. How you doing?
Hi, Rick. Just wanted to say that Jeb not only takes great nature photographs, but his sports photography
yes.
is incredible. I have some original Jeb Wallace brodeurs in frames in my home from the days where I was very involved in going to all the games at Norwich. And I'm just kind of curious as to what makes him center on a certain player or a certain play to get the incredible shots he gets.
Great question. Thanks, Paula.
Yeah, thank you very much, Paula. Certainly sports is something I do almost on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
High school and college sports. It's been a little thinner this year with COVID, but it's going on. So, and I'm one of the lucky people who actually gets to attend games and see the action. I guess what I like, I want to get faces in there. I don't like the backs of people, so I always try to get faces. I like some peak action, you know, not just standing there holding the ball, but doing something pretty active. If there's some emotion involved, that's super bonus, which is probably the hardest thing to get because it's very fleeting usually. But and I like to have whatever they're playing with in the picture too, the puck or the ball or. But it's, you know, I take a lot of photos at a game and very few tick all those boxes. So it's actually, and it hasn't gotten any easier. Sports is a really challenging thing to shoot. There's you know, it's just unpredictable. You don't. It's not something you can plan ahead what's going to happen. And especially like baseball, I find really challenging because things happen far away from you, and it's super unpredictable. You just never know where that ball is going to go. With say basketball or soccer, they're always heading for a goal. They're heading for the rim, or they're going to be trying to get to the goal. So you can kind of place yourself where you would assume action is going to be coming your way. But baseball is really super unpredictable. And, you know, if every game had a close play at the plate, I'd be happy. It's a rarity.
It is a rarity.
So, you know, well, so those are, when you see my coverage of a baseball game and it's a shot of a pitcher throwing the ball, mm-hmm. that means I just didn't witness any. You know, there can be a high-scoring game where there's no close plays. It's just people rounding the bases and hitting the ball in different places. It's really tricky to get a good action shot in baseball. Sometimes games they just don't happen. So,
well, Jeb, just the other day you had a shot. It was from maybe Tuesday night Montpelier girls basketball game. Teams are wearing masks. The color pops in this great action shot, and I'm thinking how this is going to look 5 or 10 years down the road as an historical image of what it was like when we played sports during the pandemic. I mean, here's a shot that is just a few hours old, and I'm thinking this will hold up. This will be one we'll look back on and say, look at this. And it's a Jeb Wallace Broder, of course.
Yeah, well, this year has been full of that, actually. I mean, as hard as it's been, it's always in the back of my mind that this is a historic year. And these pictures are an important document. And I can just think of so many pictures that I personally think are important to me and may be important down the road. You know, just that first day back at school, I went to Twinfield, and the kindergartners were coming in. And there's a little kid stepping off the school bus with their mask on and carrying their lunchbox. And the first person they're greeted by is this wonderful school worker dressed to the nines, you know, face mask on, and holding one of those little temperature guns to the kid's forehead. And I'm just like, you know, that's hopefully and probably never going to happen again. It's just an important historical moment, I think, that first day of school during COVID. And there's just been a ton of those this year. So I miss seeing people's smiles because the masks are hiding them.
Right.
But I do recognize that there's been just a lot of shots of people coping and coming up with new ways to do business or how to interact with other people. And I've been able to capture a lot of that. So it's been a really fertile year for me. Photographically.
Yep. Times Argus chief photographer Jeb Wallace Broder is with us until 10. So we're going to take a break for a CBS news update, then be back to continue the discussion. You can call us 244-1777. Toll free, it's 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. We've got Josh waiting on the line from Facetown. So Josh, hold on. We'll get to you right after the break. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we're raising our hats with a sale. 20% off all men's and women's fall-winter clothing. Our deli is pumping out amazing deliciousness with old favorites like the number 6 and some new specialties like the best Reuben anywhere in Vermont. The grab-and-go dinners are a great value. Generous, full-course meals for two. Check out warrenstore.com for weekly menus and to order online. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. The Warren Store in Warren Village is open 7:30 to 5 daily, practicing all COVID protocols.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. I'm always amazed how photographers look at life. They see a room or a landscape differently than most of us, and they pay such careful attention to light and shading. They love the magic hours that happen around dawn and dusk and really don't dig shooting with a high sun. They have their reasons. Times Argus photographer Jeb Wallace Broder is discussing these things with us this hour, and you can either email us at vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. You can call in 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And we've got Josh in Facetown joining us now. Morning, Josh. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm on the road, and I was watching the cell service go in and out, so hopefully you can still hear me.
Loud and clear.
Great. So I used to take photos for the high school, when I was in high school, for the newspaper and things like that. And one of the perks that I remember was you got to go to all the events and be up close. And I was just wondering, is there any one event or, you know, something you remember and you say, wow, this is so cool, I get to be right up front at this event, otherwise I wouldn't have seen it?
Yeah, beautiful question. Thanks, Josh. Jeb?
Hey, thanks, Josh. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I you know, I've been to countless events over the years, great and small, and yeah, I do get to be right in the front of the line, so to speak, to get the shot, and I'm super appreciative of that. I think one that definitely stands out in my mind was the Phish concert in Coventry years ago. I don't know if people remember, but they took over the Coventry Airport, and it was coincided with a very large rain event in the summer, and became this just huge mud pit, and I don't know how many tens, hundreds of thousands of people came, and you just couldn't get to the place. It was sold out. It was
people just
like,
parked the cars on the road.
Yeah, so I was going to cover it, and they knew I was coming, so I got these directions sent to me at the last minute of how to sort of get in the back way. And I was driving up 91, and yeah, there was cars parked in the median of the interstate, and people camping next to on the highway. And I made my way in and drove up this dirty one, muddy one lane track that came out to the back of the stage, and I got ushered up onto the scaffolding right next to the stage to take some pictures. And I was just, you know, looking down on the band and looking out this sea of people. And it actually was a beautiful day at that point, and just couldn't believe I was there. I'd come from the Stowe car show before that.
Yeah.
They were, all the antique cars were getting stuck in the mud, and I drove up Stowe and just couldn't believe what a day, a memorable day it was for me. But I definitely would not have, I couldn't even have gone to the concert as a fan at that point, and yet I was able to be in my pretty prime spot and see the whole thing from above. It was, that was pretty magical.
Well, how does it work being a photographer for a local newspaper? Do you have an assignment editor who says, you know, you need to go to these things, and then the rest of the time you're on your own, or how does it work for you?
That's right, yeah. So our editor, Steve Pappas, will he maybe get some stories from his reporters and says, we need to illustrate this. And I usually don't get to see the story. It's just like, get a shot of this person. So I'm kind of left to my own to figure out how to illustrate what they do. Mm-hmm. Or the reporters will call me and say, you know, I'm covering such and such town debate. Can you get a shot of this building or this person? But mostly, as anyone who reads, we have a lot of what we call standalones, which are just photos that are in there for their own sake. And mostly that's what I shoot. A lot of the news coverage is sort of, you know, town council meetings or school board things. And
yeah, that makes for great art.
Exactly. So mostly I'm on my own to go find pictures. So I'm pretty aware of what's going on around town. I read all the Front Porch Forum postings for the towns in our area and talk to people. And whenever I'm out and about, I'm like, if I see somebody, I'll just, you know, what's going on. I like last week, I went into Birch Grove Baking, and I know the owner's there, and I was just, you know, getting some English muffins. And instead of just buying, I went in and I said, hey, how are you guys doing? How's business? Anything going on that's interesting? And I said, yeah, actually, we're going to be closed next week to renovate. And we're, you know, painting the whole place, shutting down for a week, putting in new shelving, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, great, I'll be back. So that's like slightly newsworthy.
Yep.
And, so I went in yesterday or the day before and got a shot. Yesterday it was, and got a nice shot of them painting in there, and it's in today's paper. So I just always have an eye and an ear out for what's happening in the community. And it's not necessarily earth-shattering news, but it's just part of what it's about living here, you know. Little things like that mean something to people. So,
well, Jeb, with a writing staff of a newspaper, you know, especially when it was more robust, they definitely, you know, you had specialization. I mean, you were a sports writer or a political writer or an arts writer.
That's
and there's
right.
still some of that. But when it comes to a photographer, you know, you go, you have to shift from a breaking news story to a politician's news conference to a high school basketball game, and be able to shoot, you know, what are really different events, different types of photography, and do it all well.
That's really true. It can be whiplash some days. You know, it's just comical some days, the variety of things that I'm covering. And I love that about it. And it's, you know, I approach all the, every assignment the same way, and I'm trying to make as good a picture as I can. I never think this is a gimme, or I've done this so many times I'm not really interested in it. I always remind myself that you actually haven't seen this yet, and there could be something unexpected that happens, and got to keep an open mind, you know, which can be hard to do, you know. Shooting the 4th of July parade for 25 straight years or something,
right.
You can be like, oh, man, I've seen this all before, but that's just not true. You got to go in with an open mind. And more often than not, I'll surprise myself in that, and there will be something I didn't expect or hadn't shot before, and that's what's exciting about this job to me. But I like it all. I mean, especially... I like shooting people a lot and meeting people, so that's mostly what I look for, is people doing their thing. But I like it all.
Did you ever have a hankering to try your hand at a larger newspaper in a bigger city?
I never did. I grew up in Montpelier, and I love this part of the world. You know, I've lived other places, so I have and traveled quite a bit, so I know. I feel like I'm not insulated. I know what's out there, but I really love the people who live here, and I love my independence. I just don't think I'd get this sort of freedom at a larger paper. And, you know, I can pretty much decide how my work life is structured, and I really appreciate that. And it's just it's a beautiful place, for one thing, and it's no shortage of great material here. So, yeah, no, I never did want to. I know that's it is a goal for a lot of news people to climb up into bigger markets, but I've always been pretty content here.
All right, let's take another call. Jim is joining us from Barrytown. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Rick. Hey, Jeb.
Hey, Jim.
I'm here. Hey, I just want to say,
is it Jim Miller?
You got it. Hey.
Hi, Jim.
I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the photos that you did with Tom Sladen about Bobby Gosch collecting art.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And, I've been going through a lot of stuff with your photos, and that was 2003. And then there was another photo that's my favorite. My son was attending U32 High School, and you went to a rock and roll assembly, and you shot photos of the school rock and roll band class.
Yeah,
and
I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then we can mention the accordion.
Absolutely.
And you know,
Jim's a fabulous accordion player. If you don't know, if anyone doesn't know out there.
Well, when you stop by that certain business in Barrie that Christmas time, and
yeah, I
was dressed. I was dressed as an elf. It totally shot down my rock and roll studio image, you know, as a rock and roll artist.
There goes your street cred, right?
He was right on the front page.
And yeah.
Jeb, you were always good about following through with these great blow-up photos. The one that you took of my son's rock and roll class at that assembly, he is like forefront, and it's one of my favorites that I have displayed to this day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's great to hear, Jim.
And I'll be seeing you around. I see you everywhere. I don't expect you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great call. Thanks, Jim. Wow. Yeah, you have shot everybody's, in everybody's family around Central Vermont.
It's really actually very delightful for me to walk into somebody's home and see one of my old photos taped to the fridge.
Yeah,
you know, of their kid or something, and it's funny. You know, newspapers are they sometimes feel a little outdated. You know, it's an old technology, but it still means something to people. Like, it's a thrill. Even, you know, kids who, you know, don't subscribe, may never subscribe to a newspaper, are all about Instagram and stuff. But when they get their picture in print in the paper, it's a thrill still, which is cool.
Absolutely. And we've got Bill next in Waitsfield. Hi, Bill. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Jeb. Bill. Were you taking aerial photos back during the June 1998 flood?
Remind me which one that was.
Okay, that was the big flood before the big flood. That was
the one that flooded downtown Montpelier. And
well, it flooded. You know, it flooded. Well, the Mad River Valley.
Pretty
much, and you know, other places. It did a lot of damage over in Bristol also.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it got, you know, pretty much all of the central Vermont area watersheds, so Mad New Haven and White. Anyway,
I was not taking aerial photos, but I do remember that storm, and that's sort of been that's like our disaster that we deal with here.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess snowstorms can be bad, but there's been a lot of flood events over the years. And
have you done much aerial photos?
I've done a bit, but I actually bought a used drone from a fellow photographer last fall. So I guess that counts as aerial, but I've been playing with that and had a few in the paper. I'm trying to not overdo it. And I also realize that they can be a bit of an obnoxious thing for people. So I'm trying to be discreet in my use of them, but I've really been enjoying, trying this sort of new technology for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have been up in planes at times over the years, but you know, just a handful of times. One of my former colleagues, Sandy Macy's, who I worked with for years at the paper, had his private pilot's license, so we would go up together sometimes. He had to satisfy a certain number of hours that he had to fly, and so I'd sometimes go up with him and take pictures while I was up there. But we didn't have a staff plane or anything, or a news helicopter or something, unfortunately.
Right.
Not something I've done a ton of.
Let's see if we can get that in the Times Argus budget.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't see why that'd
for
be
next year. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about shooting from a distance. You know, quite often you get close to your subjects. Any people that you've shot who you were really impressed with when you got to meet them?
Oh, gosh. So many. I've gotten to know all the governors in the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, Jim Douglas as always stands out as one of my favorite people who I was surprised by. I don't want to diss on him, but people always thought he was a little bit nerdy.
Right.
Kind of a goof.
Right.
And he just has the best sense of humor.
Yep.
I really enjoyed getting to know him. And, you know, always remembered me. And I think he worked with my dad a little bit, so he always asked about him. And
He remembers everybody.
He does. Yep. And he's wicked funny.
Yes, he is.
Great sense of humor.
Yeah, as a politician, he seems a little stiff, a little rehearsed. He can answer any question, but when you're alone with him, right, he can just kind of, out of the side of his mouth, he has the funniest little lines.
It's surprising that way, yeah.
Yeah. And how about any subjects that proved really difficult for you?
Oh, let's see.
I don't want to get you in trouble, but.
No. Let me think. I mean, the difficult ones tend to be people who aren't comfortable being photographed.
Yeah.
And they say they will, but it's hard to get them to relax and feel and to get a shot that I feel captures them. And that's relatively common. You know, a lot of people, you know, they don't like public speaking. They don't like having their picture taken. It's pretty common common things. So I find it often tends to be older folks, and I don't know if that's because they feel like their appearance doesn't match the way they feel on the inside anymore. Or, so I find sometimes that's a little bit more of an effort to get a good shot of a senior, but usually it works out. You know, I just have to spend a little bit more time talking, getting to know their story, seeing what's interesting about them, and then they relax, and it all works out. But yeah, getting a good shot of someone who doesn't want to be photographed can be, or always is, a challenge.
Yeah, we used to struggle for years trying to find a photo of Bernie Sanders with a smile on his face.
Because, oh God, yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's pretty gruff. He's, yeah. You know, I photographed him over the years, and as he's not my favorite politician to photograph because, yeah, he's there's not a lot of light moments with him.
Right.
He's a pretty serious guy and kind of all business. It's hard to develop a personal rapport with him.
Well, I haven't asked you anything. We would talk about your career the whole time, not asking for any tips, but, you know, we talked about people, try to get to know them and feel comfortable, get them to feel comfortable being photographed. But when someone's trying to capture like a great image, a landscape, what is the key to doing something like you do and maybe coming close to your work?
Well, the way I've always approached it is to really look at my images and be self-critical, like, Why does this one really work well versus this one that just doesn't seem to work as well? And part of that's my fine art background. I'm used to being very critical of things. But it's a great learning tool to actually look at, you know, how come this one, you know, sometimes you just look at a picture and you know it's a good one. And I'll say, you know, what makes this one better than another one? And it might be where the subject's placed, the colors, there's so much that goes into a picture, but what are the elements that came together to make this a memorable picture? And I do that a lot. I look at my stuff and I say, why is this one not working?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I tell young photographers a lot of times. I have worked with a lot of kids in schools over the years with community-based learning and stuff, and that's, we go through their pictures and talk about why is this a good one and this one isn't as good. And instead of just tossing it aside, actually really look at it. And so I think it's really examining things closely, you know, all the details, what about it. So I guess that's sort of a general answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I approach things.
And Jeb, we only have about 30 seconds left, but what advice do you have for someone who wants to pursue a career in photojournalism?
Don't do it.
Yeah.
No, I think photojournalism is really about human relationships. So if you are a person who enjoys meeting new people and finding out about them, it's just super rewarding. But if you're more interested in yourself, it's maybe not the career for you. Be really interested in other people and what their lives are all about. If that's the case, it's awesome career to follow.
Loved hearing about how much you love what you do, Jeb. Jeb Wallace Broder is the chief photographer at the Times Argus, where he's worked since 1993. So even if you don't know Jeb, you know his work. Jeb, thanks so much for being on the program this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick. This was really fun.
Good. We're going to break for CBS News. We'll be back to talk to national correspondent Bob Ney. Then we're going to hear from Sally Pollock of 7 Days. And we'll also hear from Kenny Drugs about the vaccine. So stick around for the 10 o'clock hour. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we're raising our hats with a sale. 20% off all men's and women's fall winter clothing. Our deli is pumping out amazing deliciousness with old favorites like the number 6 and some new specialties like the best Reuben anywhere in Vermont. The grab-and-go dinners are a great value. Generous, full-course meals for two. Check out warrenstore.com for weekly menus and to order online. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. The Warren Store in Warren Village is open 7:30 to 5 daily, practicing all COVID protocols.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Time to turn to national correspondent Bob Ney to help us make sense of all that's happening in the world. Bob, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
You know, Bob, just about every guest on the show is from Vermont. You're from out in Ohio, so you're like our foreign correspondent.
Right, international.
That's right.
But I like your syrup, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, we got to get you some. Nothing like pure Vermont maple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bob,
mm-hmm.
Let's start with the COVID count, as we normally
right.
do.
Right. You know, Rick, the total recoveries now no longer include U.S. recoveries because our recoveries have grown so much they're not putting them in the world statistic, which is interesting.
Hmm.
But, it's something. Total deaths worldwide are about 2,567,000, and our total deaths are 520,000. So definitely it's definitely on the lowering end, mm-hmm. because as you and I have been doing this for weeks, it mm-hmm. was jumping. I think you and I probably started at 375 and it jumped to 500. So right now that's a good sign, you know, with the vaccines starting out there and the virus taking its course and some herd immunity obviously beginning.
Now, there is some rise in the number of cases, though, in Europe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Europe's having some problems. Israel had experienced a bit of a problem. I think they got that under control. But, yes, Europe has had a problem, and the United Kingdom in particular, Britain.
Yep. All right, let's look at domestic issues. And first thing is the House did indeed pass the COVID relief bill. It's at the Senate. And some very interesting, probably C-SPAN action last night as they read the entire 630
right.
pages.
Oh, forbid that anything would be actually read by anybody in the Congress. But,
right.
You know, now, by the way, the House has the same rules for those listeners that, watch C-SPAN. You'll notice when a bill starts, they will say Bill 17, an amended act to do the following, and they'll start to read it. And you'll see a member stand up normally in the House or the Senate and say, Madam Speaker, I move that the bill be considered as read. And immediately, if there's no objection, you get into the, arguments of the bill. That's normal course. Well, in this case, Senator Johnson said, I want it read, 628 pages, so that's, it's a dilatory tactic that, just slows the process down a little
sure.
bit. And so he's from Wisconsin, Republican, and he asked for it to be done.
Now, the federal budget is a bit larger, isn't it? How long do you think it would take for that to be read?
Ooh. Oh, that's, I think that, now, when I was there, I think it verged on a couple thousand pages.
Right.
So, it depends if they have a speed reader, I guess, or not.
All right. Well, let's hope that doesn't get called for. But, anything can happen within the walls there of the Capitol. Yeah. We've seen that this year, haven't we?
Well, yes, we certainly have.
I'm going to talk about what's happening at our border where shelters are overflowing right now.
Yes. There's two controversial spots right now. When I say spots, I'm talking about policy in general. That, frankly, Rick, shocked me how fast they're approaching on President Biden. Mm-hmm. One of them is the Middle East in general, Iran in particular. The second one is the humanitarian crisis at the border. Word has gotten out that we've, changed the policies through executive orders. As we know, when President Biden got into office, he issued, a few executive orders on immigration and the border. And so what it has ended up is there's been increased amount of children to the border unaccompanied. We have the story that was carried yesterday where they had a bus load of people that I think 100 people tested with COVID, and then they were released, and promised to quarantine, which, obviously is stirring a lot of debate. Mm-hmm. but it's definite that there are 321 is an average children per day now coming into the United States or to the border. And so we can house, I think we're short 20,000 beds. So we have the president getting hammered from the right because he has, quote, caused this. And the president is getting hammered from the left because he's not moving fast enough to open up some facilities. The shelters are swarmed. Everybody's overwhelmed down there. And it's come up very quick.
Oh, my. Now, you mentioned Iran. We really should untie this for people because this is pretty interesting. First of all, let's look at the president's stance on the Iran nuclear deal.
Well, President Biden, of course, was, you know, foremost outstretched and helpful to President Obama, you know, when he was VP and part of the whole Iran nuclear deal, which then was canceled by Trump. And there was speculation that Biden would be able to quickly, you know, reproduce that nuclear deal. Now, since he's become president, and, you know, I'm a longtime Iran observer, I should mention, too, I actually participated in a meeting in Stockholm with then Senator Biden's staff. We interchanged my staff with Senator Biden's staff at the time on Iran issues during the Bush administration. So, you know, there's been a long-term policy of Biden with foreign affairs in Iran in particular. Now, since he's become president, though, he's made some strikes, you know, into Syria and at the Iranian-backed militia. He's getting big resistance from publicly from some progressive Democrats who said, you know, you're escalating the Mideast. He's also getting criticized for not doing sanctions against Mohammed bin Salman now that the finger's been pointed to him as a culprit in the Khashoggi murder. And also some of the progressive community are becoming upset with President Biden over debating whether to remove troops from Afghanistan or not. Now, it's very interesting. Trump, you know, was on the other end of some of these issues. It's kind of interesting to see some of the Trump people agreeing with the progressives, you know, on the Mideast policy.
Yeah. He's also gotten some pushback, didn't he, from Benjamin Netanyahu over the Iran nuclear deal.
Oh, he certainly has. Netanyahu is can't stand the Iran nuclear deal. He wants nothing to do with the Iran nuclear deal. And it's just he's going to get resistance from Netanyahu all the way.
With the Syria airstrikes, that brings up the question of war powers of the president. And I think that is another issue that's really percolating there in Washington.
Yeah. Oh, yes. This is interesting. 1992 and 2000. Now, I was there, but I'm having a senior moment, Rick. I think 2001, it would have been. We gave full force and authority for George Bush to use the war power. So they were done in the 90s and then in the 2000s. And the end result is that Biden is still operating under that. Now you've got a bipartisan move by Senator Kaine, Democrat from Virginia. He's very famous because, of course, he ran for VP, you know, with Hillary Clinton, and Senator Young from Indiana. And they're saying, no, let's strip the White House of the War Powers Act. Now, this has been debated for years. On the Democratic side, too, they don't like the strikes, you know, that have been done in Syria. So there's a debate ensuing should the War Powers Act be there. We did those way back when, and frankly, they were never altered. And so every president since then has been able to utilize them, especially when it comes to the Mideast.
So got a couple bills, too, that I think the House has passed or is looking at. One is the Elections Reform Bill.
Yes, this one, I've begun to take a look at it. It's changed a little bit from when it was originally done. It does have some good provisions in it. It really does. It has some, you know, provisions that help with more access with the voting issues. It tackles the debate of should, you know, felons vote or not, which in a lot of states that, you know, they can. In some states they can. It would be a federalization of it. And it also goes into funding and campaigns and I think some great transparency. So there's some good things in it. But here's the but. On the other side, it would tend to, as written, really, I would say, federalize local elections. I would predict to you that states, whether they're blue or they're red, once they look into this, would be a bit uncomfortable with the feds. And then the big question is, who enforces this? Does the Justice Department enforce it? Do they set standards of when polls are opened? So I think they've got to be a little careful on it. It goes to the Senate, where it's not going to have probably an easy time. And then the second bill is a police reform bill.
Right.
It's named after George Floyd. And that bill is going to certainly have resistance from the police unions because it creates a national registry. And it's questionable. How do you get on that? Can any complaint put you on that? Does it jeopardize you in a lawsuit if you're a police officer? So that's going to have controversy to it also. Those are the two that would pass this week.
National correspondent Bob Ney from our international desk in Ohio. We always appreciate hearing your explanation of these events. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, take care. We'll talk to you next week. It's hard to upstage a new president and vice president on Inauguration Day, but our famously frumpy Democratic Socialist Independent U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders pulled it off with his mittens. They weren't Paris chic, more Vermont practical. But what do you expect? We'd rather layer than be a player. Sally Pollack was on the Bernie Mittens beat this week for 7 days. She joins us now with the story. Sal, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. So, Sally, introduce us to Jen Ellis, the creator of Bernie's Mittens.
Jen Ellis is a second grade teacher at the Westford School. She is a graduate of UVM, where she majored in English. She lives in Essex Junction, and she just turned 43 and celebrated with takeout from a single pebble. And in addition to teaching, she is a craftsperson, and she makes mittens out of sweaters. She recycles wool sweaters and turns them into mittens.
Wow, a single pebble. She has great taste. How did Bernie, how did Bernie get the mittens?
Bernie got the mittens as a gift, a present from Jen, after his 2016 presidential run for the Democratic candidacy, which he lost, as we know, to Hillary Clinton. And Jen's daughter was a preschool student at a preschool in Essex Junction that was run by Bernie Sanders' daughter-in-law. So Jen made mittens for all the their teachers at the school, and then she said to me, I got a bee in my bonnet. She made a pair for Bernie, and via his daughter-in-law, passed them on to Bernie. And she said she wanted to give them to him. She goes, I like him, and I was disappointed he didn't win. Bernie is a politician who's thinking about more than the 1%. He wants a better world for everybody, and I want that too. So she made him mittens.
So was Jen Ellis just making these mittens, or was she selling them at the time?
She was. They were a present for Bernie.
All right. So how has life changed for Jen Ellis over these past 6 weeks since the inauguration?
Well, so what happened with the mittens, a photograph was taken of Bernie Sanders sitting socially distant, you know, at the inauguration, alone wearing these mittens and a Bernie and a Burton jacket, sorry. And it became just this instantaneous global meme where people sort of superimposed that image of Bernie Sanders everywhere you could imagine, everywhere they wanted him to be. You know, you name it, he was there. And it's, and then the question, or, you know, quickly people were like, where are these mittens from? Can I get some, basically? And she told me she has received, I think she said, at least 18,000 emails from people all over the world, Israel, Norway, Ireland, Australia, Germany, across this country, you know, and media requests. And so, you know, she's not a mitten factory. She's a second grade teacher. So it was pretty remarkable phenomenon what occurred in her life suddenly, you know.
What does she think of all the attention she's been getting?
Well, I mean, she was, at first it was somewhat stressful, she said, because she had to, you know, it was just this sudden onslaught of attention. And she's, what she's doing with it, she sort of has found ways to make these mittens for charity, sort of to benefit various charities. And Bernie Sanders' campaign has done the same. So his campaign office made apparel, sweatshirts and T-shirts with that image on it. And mm-hmm. I think they've sold, you know, close to $2 million for local Vermont charities, including Meals on Wheels. And Jen has is collaborating with Vermont Teddy Bear Company and Darn Tough, the sock company, and she's worked with their designers to create products sort of based on her mittens, again, a portion of which the sales will go to benefit local charities.
You know, if it was made, Sal, I'd be cashing in on this opportunity to the max, but she is not the mercenary Rick Zingari, so she is doing this all to benefit these different charities. And her tie-in with Darn Tough, I think those socks are already sold out. I don't even know if they've been manufactured yet.
Yeah, if they're being manufactured, I think, currently. Uh-huh. And yes, they sold out. Online pre-sale orders sold out, and Vermont Teddy Bear told me they've gotten, you know, something like 20,000 emails expressing interest. You know, it's a number that a person, even if they were a solo mitten factory, which she isn't, she's a second grade teacher, couldn't possibly achieve on their own. So, you know, these are big, big companies in Vermont. She's, you know, pleased to pair with them. And she's also auctioned off a couple of she made a couple of pairs of mittens, and they were auctioned for local nonprofits, including Outright Vermont, which raised something like $40,000 for a pair of mittens right away. So, you know, she's doing occasional sort of pairs for the local charity. So.
Now, you mentioned Bernie's camp. They are using the picture, which has become, in the world of memes, probably the best ever meme ever to hit the internet. And they, I'm pretty sure that Bernie's camp got use of the photograph to be put on, you mentioned apparel, on just about everything, if all the money went to charity. And I think now you said, what, about $1.82 million for local Vermont charities. So where's that money going to?
Various places. I actually was unable to reach the campaign, so I don't sort of have a breakdown. But I know that the five Vermont agencies on aging got about $700,000 between them. And for their Meals on Wheels program. And Jen told me that was particularly, her word was, a joyful for her to hear, because her grandmother lived in Guilford, which is a town on the in southern Vermont near the Massachusetts border. Yeah. And she said she received Meals on Wheels. So she was happy that that sort of came back round. And she's also writing a book, I should say. Jen sort of, if people are interested in the work that Jen's doing, she has set up a website called Generosity Brings Joy. And the idea is to, you know, showcase and support charitable work and encourage others to get involved in whatever ways you can. And she's writing a memoir that's sort of built on this moment, with the working title is the same name, Generosity Brings Joy. But, you know, the one thing it's, you know, that really, like, as I said, she's a second grade teacher. She learned to teach through a program called, or she was trained through Teach for America, which is a very intensive teacher training program. And her first, she was then placed in a school in rural North Carolina and moved back to Vermont, hiked the long trail, and then became a teacher. And what's really neat, I didn't go to her outdoor classroom, but I talked to her about it. Since COVID, she's sort of built an outdoor classroom at her school in Westford. And, you know, not in the heart of winter when it's terribly cold, but the students in her class have been, you know, studying, doing their lessons outside for most of the year. And it's really neat. So.
Any idea if those mittens are warm?
They look warm. I mean, and, I can see why they're a very desirable object. Beautiful. They look warm. And apparently they're warm because it was cold for Washington, D.C., and that's Bernie right. Sanders said that's why he wore them, to stay warm. So, yeah. And he wore them on the campaign trail. So,
I will say it was about 40 and windy. Now, we would call that warm, but, you know. Yeah. In Washington, D.C., it's cold. Hey, I want to talk about another breaking story that you've been working on. I think you wrote about this yesterday, and that is Peanut the squirrel. What's going on with Peanut?
Well, at the moment, Peanut is in her cage in Barrie, Vermont. Peanut is a squirrel that was has been sort of the subject of, Peanut is a blind squirrel that was rescued at birth, really, by a 9-year-old girl in St. Johnsbury who cared for it for the first years of its life. And currently what's going on with Peanut, after Peanut could no longer live with its family in St. Johnsbury, she was placed at the home of a wildlife rehabilitator in Barrie, and who became concerned in the past week that the Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife was going to take Peanut and euthanize it. And the concern arose because I guess the department thought that maybe the rehabilitator was violating some of the rules and regulations required of rehabilitators. Mm-hmm. And then a petition of the rehabilitator, whose name is Amy Brown, started a petition to sort of draw attention to this issue. The squirrel, who's never lived in the wild, has been in captivity for 7 years, who's blind due to cataracts, put up a petition to sort of support Peanut, and more than 9,000 people signed the petition in about 3 days. And the last I heard from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, they said they have no plans to take Peanut from its home. So,
all right. No word what Peanut thinks. You didn't get a quote from Peanut, I take it.
No, I didn't get a quote.
Okay.
Peanut's in a cage in Barrie in a room with some other squirrels and a woodchuck and a chipmunk, all of whom need some form of rehabilitation before they can be released into the wild.
And it should be noted, as cute as some wildlife are, especially when they're young, I think Fish and Wildlife will always say, you know, just let them be. Call a ranger, call an official to take care of wildlife, because they do not belong in a home. And these wildlife rehabilitators, right, do have the right to keep them at least for a while till they're ready to go back into the wild. So,
absolutely good point. The goal of rehabilitation, I was told by the sort of chief official of enforcement at Fish and Wildlife, is to get these animals who are usually they're injured or orphaned back into the wild as quickly as possible. And I mean, their concerns are disease, communicable disease between
right.
humans and various wildlife species, biting, scratching, and also just behavioral concerns. You don't want them to become habituated to domesticity for various reasons.
You got
it. I'm glad you said that.
Bernie's Mittens and Peanut the Squirrel. Sally, you covered it all. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Take care. All right. We continue. Oh, up next, we are going to talk to Kenny Drugs. We're going to talk about the COVID vaccine. That's coming up right after CBS News Update.
At the Warren Store, we're raising our hats with a sale. 20% off all men's and women's fall winter clothing. Our deli is pumping out amazing deliciousness with old favorites like the number 6 and some new specialties like the best Reuben anywhere in Vermont. The grab-and-go dinners are a great value. Generous, full-course meals for two. Check out warrenstore.com for weekly menus and to order online. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. The Warren Store in Warren Village is open 7:30 to 5 daily, practicing all COVID protocols.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. If your age band hasn't come up yet for a COVID vaccine shot, you might not have been paying much attention to the logistics. I know I haven't. Or maybe you have had your group come up, but were unclear what to do or had some reservations or concerns about getting the COVID vaccination. Well, it's time to get some answers, and we have just the person to clear things up for us. We have Kinney pharmacist Haley Hooks with us this morning. Haley, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, we're happy to have you. Now, Haley, for people who aren't sure whether they should get the vaccine, what would you tell them?
I think that I've talked and listened to a lot of concerns of my patients and answered their questions. And I can tell you that I think a lot of opposition, I think that's what you're asking me, Rick, is why would you not?
Right.
Why are they not getting this vaccine?
Right.
I think a lot of the opposition that is surrounding this is because the vaccine came out so fast, right? Everyone's like, why would I do this when this vaccine hit the market so fast?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important to understand that in a public health emergency such as this global pandemic, the development process is so atypical for unveiling a drug entity. We've coalesced, nonprofits, international academia, pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, to coordinate and speed up the development process of this vaccine. And in no way, shape, or form have we sacrificed scientific standards. So safety monitoring is happening at every stage of the development. And I think that's primarily a lot of at least what I'm hearing in the front line, why folks are so hesitant to get this. But, there's no reason, unfortunately, the emergency use authorization that's attached to this does not mean that it is not safe and effective to get.
Yeah, I think at one point last year, even probably late last summer, you know, we weren't sure that we would have a vaccine even right now, right? And all of a sudden it was available in December. So,
it's been a, pretty novel industry partnership and funding that's been able to do this. And it's normally very linear development, I'm going to tell you that, as far as the drug, the drug path to market.
Mm-hmm.
But in these outstanding circumstances, we couldn't have it. We need to save lives. That's the bottom line. We need to save lives.
You got it. Haley Hooks, what vaccines are people receiving in Vermont right now?
On the market, there are three right now that have been released. We have the Moderna vaccine, we have the Pfizer-BioNTech, and then we have the newly released in the end of February, the AD26, which is the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
And the first two you mentioned will require two shots, is that correct?
Yes, very clear distinction there. The Moderna is a, you get a primary shot, and then you get a booster 28 days after that first shot. And then the Pfizer vaccine, you get your first shot, and then you get a booster 21 days after that vaccine. And important to note,
please go right ahead.
Just really important to note is that once you receive your second vaccine, you still need to be very conscientious about the fact that your immune response is not fully developed. It is 2 weeks after that last vaccine that will then create your maximum immunity.
So still continue the social distancing, the staying at home avoiding large groups, still mask up,
correct,
do all the things that you've been doing for a year,
correct,
because you don't want to fall at the final hurdle, right, Haley?
You got it. That is a great, great way to put it, yeah.
And with these vaccines, there's three different ones. If I register to get my vaccination shot with Kinney, I don't get a choice, right? Whatever is available when my slot comes up, that's the one I get.
Yes, sir. And there's very little, difference with the efficacy behind those vaccines. That I would tell you that if you can get it, get it. Doesn't
gotcha
matter which one you're getting.
Yeah. Excellent. Now, there's a vaccine clinic that I believe you're holding this weekend at Spalding High School in Barrie.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, it's going to be pretty amazing, actually, to be able to hit that community around there with so many doses of vaccine.
And it's still the requirements, the age bands, whatever, you still have to meet those to be able to go to this clinic and get the shot this weekend.
Yes, I do believe they are able to vaccinate educators as well. I know that they are coming up here on the list, and I think that they are going to be recipients of those vaccines as well on Sunday.
Oh, excellent. Now, how do people register for vaccines through Kinney?
So easy. www.kinneydrugs.com. You go into the website. You basically click on COVID-19. Going to ask you vaccination or screening. You're obviously going to pick the vaccination, and it's going to lead you right into where you want to have your vaccine done. You pick a location. It's going to drive you right into a calendar, and you can, you know, there's available spots on whatever day. It's going to show you those spots that are available and the times that are available as well. You know, really important too, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a large population of folks that just don't have access to computers because it's all online registration. And we do have a availability for them to call directly into the store level that they wish to have their vaccine done at. And if they press number 7, which is questions or concerns about COVID-19, it will lead them into our prescribed wellness call center.
Okay.
And the call center can then enable or actually help them to schedule an appointment if they don't have that access to a computer and or a place they can, a friend or whoever can be available to them to do that. We could help them do that.
Now, Haley, I know you have the big Sunday clinic at Spalding High School this week. I know when I got my flu shot this year, I actually came to your Kinney. You're in the Essex Junction one, right?
Yes.
Yep. So it was great. I walked in. I was able to just go and give my information. It took about 10 minutes for them to get me into the system, and then I got my flu shot right there that day and walked out. But how I think things are a little bit different when it comes to being vaccinated, and I really wish you'd kind of walk people through how it differs.
Yeah, sure. Basically, you're coming into the store the same way you would if you were going to get a flu shot. You have already pre-registered somehow, some way, and you're in my system for whatever time you're set up with. You come in, and there is a vaccine consent screening form that we'll do right there on the spot with you. And also, at that time that you get your first vaccine, you're then scheduled for your second vaccine right there at the store. So we know exactly the amount of spacing that you have between the two shots. And then you proceed to an area that we have some 6 feet apart chairs in, and your name is called. You come with me or whomever the pharmacist is on duty that day. You have your vaccine. A little different afterwards because there's a observing period that I have to make sure that you're okay after the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on if you've had any type of prior reactions to vaccines or not vaccines or any other allergic reactions to things that you needed an EpiPen or whatnot, I might keep you for either 15 minutes or maybe 30 minutes depending on you know, your history.
Okay.
But then after that, you are free to go, and then you come back at your scheduled second vaccine appointment that we've made for you.
And another concern I'm sure people have are, is there a cost? Do I have to have insurance? Does my insurance pay for it? What's the deal with that?
You know, everything up to this point has been covered. I haven't seen one rejection from insurance. Right, obviously, the age group that we're doing, Medicare Part B is whom is covering those vaccines, and they are covered completely by the federal government. And then as we move and trickle down into other age categories, I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. I think these are going to be covered.
All right, good. Anything I haven't asked you, anything that's important for people to know about how to get that vaccination, the COVID-19 vaccination shot through Kinney?
I think you've covered most of it. I think that if there's any questions or concerns or folks just, you know, aren't confident about this vaccination decision, talk with your pharmacist, talk with your healthcare providers. you know, I think educating oneself about the vaccine is probably the most powerful tool right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so fulfilling for me, Rick, to watch this all go down. I've yeah. been at the pharmacy level since the pandemic started, and it is just, you know, the feeling that I get from the community is just so uplifting right now. It really is. And it's humbling. It's a very humbling experience for me as a pharmacist, too, to know that I'm, you know, helping to save lives. But, you know, educate, come in, ask questions. Or not, you don't have to come in, just call. Ask questions. And if you have any concerns, you know, you can hop onto the website, www.kidrugs.com, to get more information. Also, you know, a lot of folks, I'm not sure, know, but you can go on and text 51094. Or text COVID to number 51094, and you can be signed up with weekly messages about whom we're vaccinating, when, you know, to come in, or any other questions concerning COVID is on that, from that text messaging. So that's kind of a unique tool.
Yeah, it really is. Let's give that again.
Yeah.
So you can text COVID to 510-51094. Right. Yeah. Well, 51094. Mm-hmm. And you'll get text updates on vaccinations through Kimmy.
Yes.
Oh, Haley Hooks, I feel really great.
Yes, I'm so happy. Yes, please come in. And it was, you know, it's been, I'm so proud of you working for a company right now like Kimmy Drugs. I got to say, we've recognized the need to create sites and the accessibility of this vaccine. So, anything we can do to help move us along. It's an aggressive endeavor for
yeah.
sure, but we're all hands on deck. We're all in hand. We are in full tilt giving vaccinations.
Well, thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for spending the time with us this morning.
You. Of course. Stay warm. It's chilly out there today.
All right. Kinney pharmacist Haley Hooks, thanks so much. Dick called just as I was signing off with pharmacist Haley Hooks. Dick, are you there?
I'm still here.
All right, what you got for us?
Well, I was actually hoping to make a comment on the Kinney's. I signed up with Kinney's the first day that 65 and over could sign up for shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I already had my state account because I had been tested twice anyway. But I wish the state would actually be a little more clear when they're talking about their accounts, because when you sign up for Kinney's or even Walgreens, you don't need the state account information.
Oh, interesting.
You sign up directly for them. So I sat there waiting and waiting and waiting to get some kind of state confirmation back, and it never came because it's independent of the state sites.
So that's excellent information for people, Dick. I'm glad you brought that up. So.
Yeah.
The state is really one animal. If you're going to go with Kinney or Walgreens, you do not have to pre-register with the state. You can do that and then go through the state, or you can go directly through Kinney's or through Walgreens. So.
Exactly, because I signed up through Kinney's, and because my wife wasn't quite eligible until the current go-around, I
yep.
was able to get her signed up with Walgreens. You have to create a Walgreens account,
mm-hmm.
but it has nothing to do with the state account. So.
Gotcha. Dick, you're all vaccinated now?
Yeah.
All right. Congratulations.
I got my first one, and my second one is due in 2 weeks.
All right. You go, Dick. Thanks
Perfect.
So much. Hey,
that
was great information. Thanks for letting us know. All right, we're going to keep this going, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And it looks like we've got another call right away. Jerry is joining us from the Capitol, Montpelier. Hi, Jerry.
What I was told, I tried Walgreens, I tried Kinney's.
Yeah.
I tried them all. I finally got an appointment through the state
okay.
of Vermont. The difference is, Walgreens and I believe Kinney's, but I'm sure about Walgreens, is federal. It's a federal program, federal money they're getting, so it has nothing to do with the state.
Okay. You know, these are good questions, and I appreciate you and Dick calling in, because it could be that you want to go with one or the other, depending on your own situation. So maybe I can get somebody from the health department to clarify that. You know, if there is a route that somebody should take in their situation, should they go through you know, the drugstores, Kinney or Walgreen, or is it more beneficial to sign up through the state, get registered through the state, and get your vaccination through the state? So, Jerry, if you...
Well, as it currently stands, I have to take a bus up to the Berlin Mall to Walmart to get vaccinated. And instead, I could have walked right down to Walgreens in Montpelier and got
it
done there.
Great.
But
yeah,
you can't even get in there. Forget it.
Oh, boy.
So good luck to everybody.
Everybody be patient. Thank you, Jerry, for that information, and to Dick. Yeah, you know, I guess the logistics of what's happening, you know, are kind of being created as we go along because well, this is a pandemic. This is brand new. And as Haley Hook said, and she's so right, you know, it did kind of come upon us in a hurry. And that's why some people have been maybe a little bit reticent. But also it came on us in a hurry. And so the logistics, maybe not ironed out perfectly, just bear with the system. Do the best you can. And hopefully you'll get that vaccine, and we will put this pandemic in the rearview mirror. All right. So yesterday I made people governor. I'll still do that, although we're kind of running out of time. But I'd love to have anyone call in who wants to take charge of the state government and let me know what they would do, what needs fixing, trimming, expanding, looking after, bridges that need to be repaired. But I did want to tell you about this book. I hope to have this author on in a few weeks. His name is Matthew Hongoltz Hetling, and he's written a book called A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear, The Utopian Plot to Liberate an American Town and Some Bears. It's Grafton, New Hampshire, so just across the border. Really entertaining writing by Matthew, and I thought I would read you just something that he wrote that is well, kind of interesting, after we had our own governor, Peter Shumlin, have his encounter with a bear a few years ago. And this was back when bears were really all over the place here in New England. They hadn't been culled at all, and so the new settlers were still having major problems. And so it says, just as bear killing fueled one's manhood, lack of such prowess did the opposite. In neighboring Vermont, remember this is set in Grafton, New Hampshire, in neighboring Vermont in 1815, Governor Jonas Galusha, seeking re-election, proudly announced that he would hunt a particularly notorious bear known as Old Slippery Skin with a hitherto unknown hunting method. Governor Galusha slathered himself with female bear scent and strode off into the woods, only to return to his entourage at a full sprint, the bear behind him. So he did not capture Old Slippery Skin, and here's the postscript. He lost the gubernatorial campaign. So not a great idea if you're going to be running for governor. Don't make a wild boast about taking care of bears. Not a great idea. All right. I think we got time for one more call. We got to make it quick. And we've got John joining us from Montpelier. Hey, John, what you got for us today?
If I were governor, or I could be president.
All right. You are governor.
I'm governor. I'd hopefully influence the other states. But I would have every town have a sister town somewhere across the world.
Oh, yeah.
Requiring us to be aware of how lucky we are and how different other people are, but how wonderful they are. And it would seem to get us out of ourselves and our little provincialism, which seems to happen between the coasts more than at the coasts. So there's my plan. It's a requirement. Every town's got to pick a town somewhere and be their sister city.
I love this, John. As a matter of fact, I think Burlington has several. This might be a topic for a show someday to find out, you know, sister cities and what they do actually do in connecting with these towns from around the world and learning about their cultures. Because, John, you are the governor for the weekend. No one's going to supplant you. So it's Governor John from Montpelier. I love this. You can just move right over to the State House right now. This is a great idea. This is the way, you know, we learn about other cultures, learn what is different, but also learn so much of what we have in common and why we should all get along. Hey, you're my governor. Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you.
Great call. All right. Thank you, Governor John. Thanks to everybody, all our guests this week. I'm always appreciative of those who do spare the time to tell us their stories and share their expertise. It's a beautiful thing. That is our show for today and for the week. Vermont Viewpoint is directed by Danny McGivergan. Remember, our email address, vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Feel free. Suggest topics and guests. People have done it, and within a few days, I've had people on the air. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint. Download our podcast at WDEVradio.com. We've got the Governor's COVID-19 Response News Conference. That's going to follow CBS News. And I'm Rick Sengary. I will meet you back here on Monday.